Welcome to True Crime Sucks, a podcast about the best and worst of true crime TV and documentaries. With your host, Adam Todd Brown.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to True Crime Sucks, a podcast about the best and worst of true crime TV and documentaries. I am your host, Adam Todd Brown. Joining me as co-host this week, I got two of them. God damn. Case in point, Tom Ryman's here.
Hey, that's me. Hi, how's it going?
How are you?
I'm doing great. I love true crime. I love shitty true crime. I love what ghouls true crime turns us all into. So I'm excited to be here.
It sure does. And that's going to come up on this episode. But first, let me introduce the other guest co-host, Heather Maruli's here.
Hello. Thank you for having me here in my apartment.
We're all recording at Heather's apartment today.
Yeah.
Weird. Mm-hmm. Tom flew out for it. It's great.
Mm-hmm. It was important. The show means a lot to me. I believe in the mission of the show.
If you've been listening to my podcasts long enough, you know Tom, you know Heather. Tom is one of the people who runs Gamefully Unemployed, a fantastic podcast network. And Heather is a stand-up comedian who you can see telling jokes all over LA. You still doing comedy? I know.
I actually just did some shows in the UK.
Ooh, fancy governor.
I've been on a plane. Yeah, I've been on a plane. Sorry, I know you're not supposed to talk about traveling internationally when the economy is bad, but like I did go overseas. Sorry.
By boat, everyone. So this documentary watching today, this is how I started my day.
I watched it last night for the second time.
Okay. So you had seen it before. Adam, you must have seen it before, right?
I've seen it a couple times also, but in the name of taking notes, I set my alarm for 7 a.m. and got up to watch American Murder, Family Next Door, which is about the Chris Watts case. This is not a feel-good documentary at all. Those exist. There are true crime documentaries that will give you some good feels at the end.
Yeah, this isn't one of them. No. I mean, you can feel good where, like, I mean, he goes to prison at the end. Spoilers. So you can be like, I feel good about that. I'm glad he goes to prison.
Yeah, I take solace in how shitty of a criminal this guy was.
I have my own opinion on the end.
On what?
On his skills as a murderer?
I just think he should have taken the other route.
You mean
gotten a divorce?
His wife and kids?
I agree.
No, I meant like killed himself after the. I actually was thinking about this earlier about how, because most family annihilations, the person does kill themselves.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, but the minority of them, they don't. But I've noticed like two of the most notorious ones that happened, there was another woman that they were trying to be with, right? So I'm thinking of Chris Watts and also Scott Peterson. Remember that?
Scott Peterson is probably not guilty. You should look into that case.
Oh my God.
He got his death conviction.
I know. I started the documentary where people were like, oh, it's actually a serial killer. And I'm like, okay.
No, I don't. There are like five witnesses who, if they are correct in what they say, there is absolutely no way Scott Peterson committed that murder.
Okay, but can you admit there's some factors working against him big time there?
Like what?
He was having an affair.
Oh, so he's obviously a murderer.
No, but
no one has ever had an affair and not been a murderer.
His wife was pregnant. The number one cause of death of pregnant women in America is homicide.
The facts do not line up. They do not line up.
Okay.
Probably didn't do that.
I always get him mixed up with Drew Peterson, and he definitely did that.
He definitely did it.
He killed several wives.
Fucking barrel.
Wait, who's Drew Peterson?
He was an ex-cop that murdered, I think, two wives.
I have to look this up.
Like one of them mysteriously drowned and then like they reopened it. Like you probably fucking killed her.
Okay.
Right?
You know, I remember this. This was a,
Anyway, a while ago. We'll talk about Scott Peterson.
It was around the same time as Scott Peterson, which is really inconsiderate of both murderers, I must say.
I will just say there's a reason his death sentence got overturned. And We'll talk about it later. For now, we have to talk about Chris Watts, this fucking guy.
Okay.
This documentary.
This fucking guy should be like the subhead on every Chiron that's ever, like, Chris Watts, this fucking guy. Like, anytime he's on TV, that should be his official, like, superlative when he's on television.
He very famously murdered his wife, Shanann Watts. Is that how we're pronouncing it?
Yeah. Shanann, that's how they say in the doc.
Watts and their two kids, Cecilia and Bella. This happened on August 13th. I love how fast this all goes. Like,
it's
normally,
like 3 days, right?
Yeah. Which again speaks to just how shitty of a criminal this guy was.
There's also an additional element, which I think is like a happy accident that they titled it American Murder, because I think they just I think it's just a nothing title. They just came up with something that works. But like, every aspect of this crime is on video. Every aspect of the investigation is on video. Even like the initial stuff, like the initial meeting of the cops is all on. So it's a very unique documentary in that sense. But I think the title American Murder is also very applicable, right? Because like, we're in the surveillance state right now. Everybody uses Ring cameras and everybody like videotapes everything. So we have like this crime that is entirely from start to finish, except for the crime itself, is on video, every part of the investigation. So this really, really, really makes this a unique one, which might be why I've watched it multiple times. Anyway.
Yeah, it in that way does remind me of what I think is one of the last like actually good true crime series out there, which is See No Evil. Because that's just about cases where the police solved it using surveillance video. And I like that because the police can't lie. So you get to see everything they're saying. And it's like, okay, now I believe you. ACAB, but I still believe you. So August 13th is when this happens. Shanann Watts and her friend Nicole, who they must have bonded over the very weird way both of their names are spelled. They're on a trip to Arizona. And Shanann gets dropped off late at night. And the friend who dropped her off calls her the next morning to check on her because Shanann was kind of distraught over how things were going with her husband. And when Shanann does not answer any of her calls or texts, she immediately calls the police. Which, that's a good fucking friend right there.
There's a lot of like good Samaritans in this. Well, really two. Well, no, there's several, but I like how like, we'll meet a few characters in throughout the course of these videos where they're just immediately like, oh, there's something fucking wrong here. I better tell the police, like his neighbor in a second. You'll get to that. But
yeah.
This is how like you hope people react when you go missing. Like,
kinda. Yeah. But also like, I don't know. I tend to like go silent via text and social media and stuff. So I feel like it might take a few days if my wife ever murders me, then I don't know. Might take a bit for people to become concerned. Although, like when there were no podcasts, I feel
we'd notice this. When the podcasts start coming out, we'd be like, "Uh-oh,
yeah." And by then, it's too late. So Chris Watts, he shows up while the police are having a look around, and he lets the cops in. He finds that Shanann is gone. So are the kids, but her phone is there and her purse is there. So that's
and her wedding rings, right?
Yeah. And her wedding. Yeah.
Not a good sign, classically, historically, rather.
Yeah, not usually. And I don't know, I'm kind of viewing this through the lens of having already seen it, but that footage of him showing up to talk to the police,
he
seems like a guy who just killed his wife.
He does.
He seems nervous. I don't know. Like he's doing these like kind of like weird, like crossing his arms or like, I don't know, like strange movements that don't seem normal.
If you obsessively watch like interrogation videos, like my wife and I do, you'll notice like a bunch of like the nonverbal things that they watch for. Again, none of which are indicative that a person is lying, but when they see clusters of them together, they're like, this person's clearly very nervous about something. And he's like showing all of them. He can't stand still. He's doing, like you said, the arm crossing thing.
I also thought I saw a little like
sweat
brows.
He was
like
sweating.
He a little moist.
I think he was like, literally sweating.
Yeah, his hairline was receding while he was talking to him.
He was going balder somehow.
Yeah. Like if he had been wearing a smartwatch or something, his heart rate probably would have been like have you ever like look at your Apple Watch and you're like, oh my god, I'm nervous, then like your heart rate gets higher and you're like, oh wait, oh, I'm more nervous,
right? Like, you're trapped in this, like his Apple Watch would have called an ambulance if he was swearing.
Right. Yeah.
They just show up, somebody having a heart attack.
He was very suspicious. I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, just to even allow them to come into the house like that, it's kind of a bold move to be like, okay, yeah, come in.
He really, yeah. I mean, they always do this. It's even to the point where, like, later in the video, you're like, I don't know. We'll talk about that later. But like, they always seem, every one of these you watch, they seem to like have this weird confidence that I've read that's common with certain kinds of criminals. But yeah, you're right. Like, why would you, like, all he did was pull the sheets off the bed, I think. And he's like, yeah, come on in. It's like, surely I've gotten rid of all the evidence. It's like, you did this hours ago, man. Don't let the cops in your house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the only thing he had going for him is there was no blood. So anything else they find, he could just be like, well, yeah, she lives here. Of course, her hair is all over the place. This, though, like, I'm not trying to like sympathize with Chris Watts.
No, he
should have like not gone to prison. But this is, as much as anything else, a documentary about how if you have killed someone, or even if people just think you did, just hire a fucking lawyer. Like, I at this point almost find it more suspicious when someone's like, no, I'm not going to lawyer up. I'm going to lie my way out of this with the police. It's like, just fucking hire a lawyer, pal.
I feel like in 2023, especially, it's like,
yeah,
shouldn't, I'd get a lawyer. But like, I, in this situation, like, I think it would have been too, see, we're now we're like, how could he have gotten away with it? But like, like, it's
figure
like,
figure this out.
You see, what is, was he supposed to not let the cops in though? Like, cause his wife is missing at this point. Yeah. But like, also like, he clearly didn't have, like, what was his plan? Like, he was trying to say that. I don't know
if he knew that. Like, I feel like he was not really thinking ahead too much. I think he knew he was going to kill her, but I don't think he was like thinking about the long term.
Yeah, a lot of this
that come with killing somebody. So
it's really ad-libbed crime. Because like, his plan was to say that she took the kids and ran off, and she's like incredibly active on social media. She has like a following where she posts about her children specifically, and she talks to her friends all the time. She has a full-time job. She was supposed to go to the hospital the next day about her current pregnancy.
Yeah, she missed an appointment. That's how they knew something was going on. Yeah.
So it was like, was he like, how long? It was like a George Costanza lie almost, where he's driving Susan's parents out to his non-existent house in the Hamptons. Like, bro, this is going to fall apart in hours. Like, what? How long do you think you're going to ride this?
Yeah. I wonder if he actually killed her, like, in a heat of the moment kind of thing.
I'm sure.
Because if this was premeditated, God, what a sloppy plan.
Or, Heather's shaking her head. Maybe he's just, maybe it was premeditated and he's just dumb.
No, I mean, no. I think it was premeditated in a way, because he definitely, he had plans to be with, can we talk about the other woman?
Yeah, he had a whole other life. Okay. That's true.
He had plans with this other woman, and he was already like, and then immediately after this happens, he's like texting me like, what are we going to do? Like, you know, like all casual and stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, that implies premeditation immediately.
Yeah, I wonder if he had been like fantasizing about it.
Like kicking like, it around. And then like that morning, he was just like, well, I guess today's the day.
Okay, yeah. The significant thing that stands out to me about what changed during their marriage is the fact that he lost a lot of weight and got in shape.
Right, yeah.
He lost a lot of weight and got in shape, and then he started having an affair. And that actually is something that happens. Like, people will, like, lose a lot of weight and be like, oh, I feel good about myself. And then they're, like, out there, like, fucking.
I know. It's one of the first things the cops ask him about, if you notice in the interrogation. So you lost a lot of weight lately, Chris. Like, they zero in on it.
Yeah. Because he said, he was like, I used to weigh 245. And then he's like 185. That's a lot of weight.
Yeah.
But he's in incredible shape. I have to give him that.
Yeah. But I don't know. I always think it's suspicious.
It's a very fit child murderer.
It's suspicious. Like, if you're in really good shape, you're a suspicious person.
Right.
Like, something is going on with you.
Why do you feel like you need to be able to kill someone with your bare hands? I don't trust you.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, you're on a meal plan? What's up with that? Like, why are you doing
that? What hole why in your heart are those abs filling?
Yeah.
Have you tried cake?
I don't know. I just find that suspicious.
Scene with his neighbor is my favorite moment in this whole documentary.
It might be my favorite true crime documentary moment.
It's
which is a weird fucking thing to say, but like, it's the most, like, to me, this is like, next to something like The Jinx, this is like what you can, the apex of what you can hope for in a true crime documentary, like a genuine piece of reality, like a genuine piece of the investigation happening right in front of you. And it's, yeah, it's the scene with the neighbor.
Yeah. Cause the neighbor has doorbell cam footage that he wants the police to see.
He sure does. And boy, did Chris Watts not know about that. Did you see his reaction when he tells? And he's standing there watching it like this with his arms crossed.
He's like, so yeah, I was backing my truck up like I always do. And then the minute he leaves, the neighbor's like, he never fucking does that. Something's wrong with that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's that just straight up. He like, rules. He tells the cop to like hang back. And he's like, he's not acting right. He never fucking does that with his truck. There's something wrong with this dude. Like, he's acting weird.
And I like the part where after he turns the camera footage off, something showing like a fetus comes on the TV screen. Like, there's a TV show.
Yeah. He's watching like some, I forget what he was watching. I had it written down at one point. Shit.
And Chris Watts looks at that and then looks at the cop and goes, oh yeah, my wife was pregnant too.
Oh yeah. I remember that. Yeah. That was so weird.
My wife was pregnant. Is that what he says? Did he say
maybe she said is. I don't know if he said was.
Boy, I hope he said is. I mean, no.
I think he said is.
Yeah, I think he said is. Otherwise, the cop would have been like, what do you mean was? Right. But yeah, either way, that neighbor's like, this motherfucker killed somebody.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we're kind of laughing through it, but like, it's like a genuinely, like, it legitimately gives me like goosebumps when I saw it, because it's like chilling, like, to have, because you read about that, or it's like, it's always a thing in like movies or thrillers or something where somebody's like, yeah, he just wasn't acting right. And I guess, you know, lo and behold, but like, to see that like actually be a thing where somebody can be off in a way that's imperceptible to us, but somebody who knows them is like, there's something really fucking wrong with the way this guy is acting. And you'd never, he just kind of looks a little nervous to us. Right. It's really like primally chilling for, because it's about a murder. It's about a fucking triple homicide.
Right.
So yeah.
And I love the part where shortly after that moment, the police, like, someone's interviewing Chris Watts and they're like, did you and Shanann have like an argument that night? And he goes, well, we had an emotional conflict, and I'll leave it at that. It's like, yeah, buddy, that's how the police work. They're going to take your, I'll leave it at that, and be like, fine, no more questions.
He didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah. It's like, then you should have hired a lawyer. Nicole Atkinson, that is Shanann's friend. We meet her. She says that Shanann was fighting with Chris's mom because she gave one of the kids ice cream that had stuff she was allergic to in it. And this apparently turns into a big issue in the household, because Shanann does not want her kids around old people who will kill them with pistachio nuts or whatever the fuck was happening.
Yeah, something like praline, something that's awful that shouldn't even be an ice cream to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. And Chris like starts getting really distant and weird. He's not calling Shanann when she's out of town, shit like that. And he's like obsessed with working out. Like, there's one time she's on the phone with him and he's like, I really need to work out, and just starts like lifting weights while they're on the phone.
And it's like every clip we see of him that's on YouTube or whatever, Facebook videos from her different social media accounts, he's like, in most of them, he's exercising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in the middle of all the kids doing shit. So it's like, it's clear that it's like, yeah, this is all he does. He's in fantastic shape, but he's like kind of single-mindedly obsessed with this.
And that's when the cop is like, hey, you lost a bunch of weight. You fucking someone else?
Yeah.
Right.
He denies it at first. And so they
ask all the conviction of Porky Pig.
Yeah, exactly. And they ask if he will take a polygraph over it. And he says yes. And at that moment, I was like, you dummy.
What yeah, you even doing? In the year of our Lord 2023, even watching a horrible true crime documentary like this, I still like reflexively blurt out, don't take the polygraph.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a trap.
Yeah, it's such an obvious trap.
Yeah.
It's that blind confidence. Yeah, like honestly, I just don't think he's a very, like, he's obviously not an intellectual.
No. By all evidence, you know, he is like, quite stupid. I
mean, yeah. I don't know this guy.
Yeah.
He thought he could disappear his entire family and people would just be like, I guess she ran away.
And like, I mean, we'll get to the details later, but even the way he disposed of the bodies, it's like someone's going to look in there someday.
Eventually, yeah.
Like, you will be found out. How, like, were you just looking to have a good 3-4 month run with this new girlfriend before you go to prison forever?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I like when the polygraph examiner is like, hey, just for the record, if you did this, it sure would be stupid for you to be here right now. And he's like, okay, let's carry on.
That floors me too. Like the fact that they would stop and like, I guess it's probably to make sure it can't get thrown out in court later. But
yeah,
but they did make sure. I mean, you do have to like sign a thing. So they must have already had plenty of consent. So like he even got like a last chance from the polygraph lady being like, well, yeah, you know, this is dumb as hell. Like, if you take
it would be really dumb if he actually did something. I feel like, you know, that was also kind of like a technique to I feel like it was a technique to like get something out of him before the polygraph even started or something. And like she was really good at her job. Like she was very good at interrogating. Yeah, I can't believe he agreed to do that. I was nervous. Yeah. Like I was like, oh, I feel like I'm sweating and I'm not even hooked up to anything. It's
I'd crazy. Even kill my family.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
This
I
guy.
I kind of want to take a polygraph just to see if I could like pass it.
Pass it on on like basic questions.
Because it is a thing. Like there are techniques you can use to get around polygraph.
Right. Yeah. They're not completely reliable. Although I've read a couple of different sources about just exactly how reliable they are. But yeah, there's definitely people who beat polygraphs.
And so you're not going to believe this, everybody listening, but Chris Watts failed that polygraph.
He sure does.
He fucking blew it.
His strategy when they tell him that he failed is to immediately start sweating.
Yes. Hairline recedes more.
I swear to God, I didn't lie. He was like, I swear to God, I didn't lie. Yeah, okay.
Okay, man.
Sure. All right. Yeah, police are going to believe that. No worries. And eventually police find out about Chris and his secret girlfriend, which apparently they only find out because she came forward. But now that I hear myself say that, like this all unfolds over the course of like 3 days.
Very quickly.
Yeah, it's like 48 hours from like...
So they find out about his secret girlfriend because his secret girlfriend learns that his wife is pregnant, which she didn't know, and is now missing. And she goes to the police. She's like, I'm worried something happened to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. I at no point thought she was involved in this.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
No, he obviously was lying.
Yeah, he was lying to
both of them. Yeah. You know,
it was one of those, I believe she says it was one of those like, oh, he said he was going to leave her and they were on the outs. And
said that he told her they were separated.
Yeah. I mean, he's fucking lying because he's a lying murderer who killed his children.
Yeah.
So he's in this interrogation room. They're like, look, you fucking failed this polygraph test. And they start kind of pushing him toward this idea that, well, hey, did Shanann do something to the kids and then you did something to her? And it's smart because they're giving him an avenue to confess.
Yeah. It's part of the Reed technique. From all these goddamn interrogation videos I watch. But it's you offer them the ability to admit guilt to a lesser crime. So at least you've got them admitting to the crime. And then so they've admitted to the murder. Now you can let the lawyers worry about it. Now you've got your confession.
Right.
But they'll string out like a lesser crime. But well, maybe she was hurting the children and you killed her. Yeah, that's it. They don't care because you've confessed to the crime. It doesn't matter why. Lawyers will figure that out.
They point out that he hasn't cried once.
Oh, yeah.
His kids are missing, which
yep.
I'm generally not a big fan of the demeanor conviction.
Yeah.
But in this case... Yeah, dude, you are showing zero, like not even zero emotion. Like it seems like he's not showing any concern.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the video of him like on the local news being like, oh, I hope they just come home. And he's just like no emotion on his face. He's actually kind of like, I kind of felt like he was like smirking. Almost. I don't know. It was weird.
He was definitely like distracted. It had like sideline interview energy. Where you're like asking him what went wrong with the game that day.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Chris Watts, you just killed your family. What are you doing next? I'm going to Disneyland with my new girlfriend. And so during this interrogation, they're like, listen, you're not going to tell us. We get it. What if we have your dad come in? Will you tell him what happened? And I don't know what Chris Watts thought. Like, did he think the cameras turn off when dad comes in the room?
This is not an intellectual man.
This is a thing you see too in interrogations, and it works a lot.
They'll just leave you in there.
They'll leave you in there with a family member or a friend who you trust. And they're like, you know, just tell dad what you did. And meanwhile, they're recording everything. Like, he tells his dad, I mean, he lies to his dad,
right,
about what happened. He at first claims that she, like,
she
killed the kids. And then so
he said they were fighting, like he was talking about getting a divorce and they started fighting and she killed them.
And like, that's not what happened, dude. Come on.
Right.
And yeah, he says he told her that he wanted a separation and that she went nuts and killed the kids. So he had to kill her. He also says they had sex first, which, God, that's a depraved detail. Like, you know, you're about to murder your wife. And it's like, yeah, but we got a bone one last time.
It's weird. I mean, it's a depraved detail. It gets like even worse the more I think about it, because it's like, I feel like he offered that because he offers that piece of information. They don't ask him.
Yeah.
So I feel like he says that because he doesn't want them to think that he like raped her. But like, that means it's what you said. It's like, is that better? Like, I don't. Yeah. It's awful no matter how you like.
I mean, it was definitely deceptive, even if it was, I don't know, even if she might have initiated it, because like, she definitely was like upset about having no sex life or whatever. Right, like, but it's still, he's doing it under this cloak of like deception.
Right.
For sure.
Like, I don't doubt that that's probably what happened. Like, they probably did have sex, but like, his reason for offering that information makes it like even, I don't know. It's like,
yeah, it's weird.
Even weirder, even worse somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
And like, I definitely don't feel bad for Chris Watts in this moment, in this interrogation scene, but I sure feel bad for his dad.
Oh man. Yeah. Cause he learns a couple of major pieces of information in about 2 minutes.
Yeah. And the look on his face when Chris Watts tells him the kids are in that oil tank. Oh, he's like, I felt bad for him. Like that was rough.
I think that's where we learn it too. Right. Cause I remember that moment being just like, oh fuck.
Cause he finally admits that Shanann and the kids are at the first work site he went to that morning, which on the one hand, that's a risky gambit, you know, burying your recently slaughtered family at your work site.
He
wasn't late to work, so that wasn't suspicious. He could be like, I got to work on time. Of course I didn't kill him. But
and it's, what does he do? He works for like the Department of Public Works or something?
No,
or like
he worked for an oil company. And he was like a machine operator, I think, like operating the rigs or something.
So they have this oil tank out in the middle of nowhere, and he drove out there and put the kids in the oil tank and buried Shanann in the desert.
Yeah. Did he kill the kids first or just like put them in that
tank? He killed them first.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think later on, well, I mean, should we even get to this point yet? But I think he killed Shanann first and then killed the children later, right?
Oh yeah, no, I thought Adam was asking, did he kill the kids before he dumped them in the tank? Oh, he says he did.
Oh yeah.
Or is that how he did? Well, he like, I mean, drown them in oil? Which,
no, I don't.
God, I hope not.
He says he's. I mean, but he also says that he murders one child in front of the other child. So it's like,
right? Man, yeah.
God, it's not like, it's another situation. It's like, well, it's not better what he did.
Yeah, no, that's like, to me, that's the most horrifying part of the crime.
It's like, God, man.
It's a child that like your kids are, they're not so young that they have no idea what's going on. Cause like, he said that like one of the kids was like, what's wrong with Bella or something. Right. Yeah, and
she was like, is what happened to Bella going to happen to me?
Oh my God. That is like, the most horrifying part of it for me. I was like, so disgusted by that.
Just thinking of how completely and implicitly you trust your parents when you're that age.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, what a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, there's video of one of the kids singing a song called Daddy My Hero.
Oh my God. It's so sad.
Yeah. I forgot about that. God damn it.
Yeah, that is rough.
This fucking guy.
And so after we get to the confession in the documentary, they backtrack like a few days before this murder happens, when Shanann went on this trip to Arizona and Chris stays home with the kids. And it seems like during that trip, they were on pretty decent terms. Like the text messages back and forth between them are fine. She leaves him this really loving letter before she goes. But then this motherfucker tells her that he's going to a Rockies game and that he needs to get a babysitter for the night. And she's like, all right, that I guess that makes sense. And then she looks at the bank statement and sees a like $60 meal tab from a local bar. And she's like, what did you eat that cost that much? And he like tries to lie his way out of it, but she realizes that he probably was out with someone else.
It seems like he was trying to get caught too, because like he had kept this a secret for however long it was. I don't think it was super long, but it wasn't like super short. But then this weekend, he just puts both meals on the credit card that they share. So it was like he knew she was going to see it.
Yeah.
And like he knew that she was already paranoid about him cheating on her. Like she was already thinking about it because of his the way he was acting, because he was cheating on her. So it's like it really seems like he like kind of blew it up on purpose.
I don't know about that.
Or maybe he's just fucking dumb.
I think he's a dumb guy. I think he's stupid.
Yeah, I feel like if he did it on purpose, like you would think the next step then is, all right, well, we should talk about getting a divorce.
Getting a divorce, right.
Right.
I mean, any part of this, they should have talked about getting a divorce, but he didn't because he's a murderer.
Yeah. And a coward. He's a fucking coward.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he probably like didn't want to lose money, like shit like that. Like all the bullshit.
Like all those like MRA guys are like, oh, divorce is disfavorable for men always. Like, you'll lose all your money in a divorce.
Usually men's fault.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about all of those clips? They're mostly audio clips, but this was in the news for a long time after it happened. And at one point in the documentary, they play all these clips of like true crime podcast types being like, Shanann was a bitch.
Oh my God.
She drove him to do this. And it's like, you motherfuckers are why this podcast is called True Crime Sucks.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you fucking
know. People like that are so fucking crazy. I mean, like the victim blaming, the misogyny, the blatant misogyny. I feel like almost every woman who has been murdered by her husband or boyfriend, people are like, well, what did she do? What did she do before that? Yeah. You know, it's sickening that people even like bring that up.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked.
Oh, the solution is murdering her? Are you like out of your fucking mind?
Yeah. In a situation like it's never like that is never the fucking answer. Just get a goddamn divorce.
Get a divorce. You know how many couples argue, and if one of them's a pain in the ass, they get a divorce, or if both of them are a pain in the ass, or they just can't get along. It's so many people do this every day and don't murder anyone.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, and for them to be like, oh, she drove him to it. Like,
no, she didn't.
You know how many aggressive women are out there who have riled their boyfriend or husband up to no end and did not get murdered? Lots. Mm-hmm. Because that is not a fucking excuse. You don't murder your wife. Like, this isn't the 50s. You don't get to like throw your wife in an insane asylum if she argues with you too much.
Right.
There is
no hysteria. It's hysteria.
Yeah. Like, there is no justification for murdering your fucking wife.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
Terrible. But anyway.
So,
and they're also conveniently ignoring the kids in that,
right?
Oh, were the kids a pain in his ass? The kids just riding his ass too much.
Well, yeah, I mean,
kids they were saying he can't go out with the fellas, so he had to smother them and throw them in a fucking oil tank.
Oh my God!
Like, get out of my
I know.
And so he eventually pleads guilty to all charges in order to avoid the death penalty, which I've also never understood that. Like, in a moment like this, your will to live is so extreme. Like, I would welcome the death penalty if I knew the alternative was going to prison forever.
He's too much of a coward. Like,
I know. I think he's very arrogant.
Yeah.
He's very arrogant, you know?
Either way.
Narcissist for sure.
Yeah.
Loved himself too much.
Definitely.
And like you pointed out earlier, offing himself when he annihilated his family was clearly never something that entered his mind.
Right.
He went to work.
Yeah.
And then he called his girlfriend, I think that same day.
Oh,
or the day after. Like,
if I recall correctly, they said like almost as soon as he was done committing these murders, he calls the kids' school to tell them that
they're unenrolled from school.
Oh, they're unenrolled.
Yeah, he said, they're being disenrolled from the school. Like, what?
And he didn't think that was going to raise any flags?
I mean, that sounds so fucking crazy.
Jesus.
And I think he also called a real estate agent to see
about selling the house.
The house, and then he calls his girlfriend, like, immediately after committing these murders, which, dude...
He may has as well have been like recorded buying a book like How to Kill My Family.
Yeah.
Like
this is a guy who's clearly not watched too many true crime documentaries.
No, he would have benefited from more.
Yeah, he
again,
may.
Again, I don't know why I'm trying to like.
I don't think he has the capacity for
to pay attention to
knowledge. I just think he's really dumb. I don't know. Something's wrong.
They do say, I believe narcissists don't have any self-awareness or a severe lack of
awareness. No, oh, they definitely don't. Definitely not. Well, I mean, they're arrogant in the way that they think that they're like good at certain things, but they're not.
Right.
You know, they think they're real smooth about stuff, or they think they're smart and they're not, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, he's off.
What do we think about the idea? I think it's Shanann's dad who brings this up. He's like, listen, my daughter was a fighter, and Chris Watts had no marks, no bruises, no scratches.
Right.
His thinking is that Chris Watts actually did this while Shanann was asleep.
Mm-hmm. I think so, for sure.
Probably. Definitely. I mean,
definitely. It's very suspicious to like, if you're like strangling somebody and they're awake, like, don't you think they would be like scratching you and like
going for those eyes, man? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ripping your eyes out. It's,
I definitely think he killed her in her sleep. Like, he's a coward.
Probably. Almost. I mean, yeah, he obviously, like we've been saying, he was in pretty good shape. So he was obviously stronger than her, but like, she has two kids in the house. Like, there's no way she, like the way he describes it too is bogus. Like, he's like, he basically says that she just kind of laid there and just accepted that he was murdering her. I'm like, no, she has two little children in the house. Absolutely not. That would not happen. She would tear your eyes out of your head. Like,
yeah, there's nothing about at least how she's portrayed in this that makes it seem like that's how she would go.
Like, her whole social media presence was all of, I mean, granted, you can argue what you want about that, but it was all about her kids. And it's like, she has these two little kids in the house, and then lo and behold, he goes on to murder them. So like, there's no fucking way she would have just been like, I guess he's killing me now, and that's just, I'm just gonna accept it.
Yeah.
Like, the way he described it at the very least is fucking not what happened.
And so the judge ends up sentencing him to life in prison, I think without the possibility of parole.
Mm-hmm.
Says this is the most vicious crime he'd ever presided over.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta imagine that's true. Like, this was harsh.
It's pretty, yeah. He killed two toddlers and dumped them in an oil tank. Like,
yeah.
His children.
Like,
for like
the new girlfriend
a reason.
Was the new girlfriend going to be that put off by him still having kids? Like, fuck, why'd you have to kill the kids, man? Like, don't kill anyone.
Don't kill anyone.
I mean, like, in that, like, don't, I'm not going to say there's no one who deserves to be killed in this world, but not Shanann Watts and her kids. Like, it's fucking insane. It's,
yeah.
And it's so common. Like, this is such a common thing where dudes are like, well, I'm married. I got a new girlfriend now. I guess my only course of action is to murder my wife.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
It's always the husband. I follow a filmmaker called Lexi Alexander online, and she often tweets that when she's watching true crime stuff. She'll just say, it's always the husband. So I always have that in my mind anytime I watch one of these things where they try to be like coy about it at first, which they do in this one. They sort of presented like maybe it wasn't Chris at first, but you're like, nah, it's always him, because it like always is. Always.
Yeah. It feels like there's been so many family annihilations where, like, I mean, you never even get to hear from the guy because he usually kills himself. And usually how they're spurred on is like the wife wants a divorce, or she wants to like separate or get away from this guy, or there's like financial problems that this person has never brought up. But this guy is just like, in a league of his own as far as like the cruelty and the arrogance of this crime, you know.
You're right. It was like totally in, I mean, I'm trying to find a way to phrase this, but you're right. Like they say, like, well, they say like the worst, the most dangerous time for somebody to leave an abusive, for somebody in an abusive relationship is when they leave.
Right.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Because it's a trigger. It sets them off. But there's no trigger here. Like he just fucking does it.
Right.
Like they had sort of this, like their relationship had been deteriorating for a while. It seemed there were already accusations of cheating. I guess like him getting officially caught was the final trigger, I suppose. But like,
yeah, well, like the problems in their relationship weren't that like extreme, you know. No. She was like, oh, we're not having enough sex, you know. That's something that people like, that comes up a lot sometimes. And then at, like, she was like a bit suspicious that he was having sex with somebody else, but like, you know, just barely, you know. And like one of the hints was the bill from the restaurant was $65, and she, you know, looked at the menu to see how much things were at the restaurant and just doing some like, you know, minor investigative work, you know. But it was nothing like overt that she saw coming, you know. It was like a total like surprise, basically. Like he, very strange. It was like, yeah, he must have been harboring like some sort of resentment for like years, you know.
Yeah, I do think he had to be like fantasizing about this and just being like, oh, if only I could get rid of the old ball and chain. But also at the same time, like, stop getting her pregnant, dude. Like all of this, and she's 15 weeks pregnant. And you're like planning this new fucking life, like
he's a clearly every decision he made was just totally selfish and just thinking about himself, and he doesn't even have the ability to think 3 days into the future, as we see with the murder he commits. So
yeah,
just not a thought for any other person ever.
And yeah, I mean, this is, it's a short documentary, and so I feel like we've kind of hit the end of it
pretty much. Yeah, that's
like, that's it was story. A pretty straightforward kind of thing, which I mean, to some degree there's a question of like, well, should this documentary even exist? And of course it should, because Shanann Watts and her kids deserve to have what happened to them be told in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not really going to learn much new about the case if you already looked into it, but This is a good true crime documentary. It doesn't drag the story out to make it six episodes. It just tells you what happened and leaves it at that.
Right.
I like the thematic stuff. There's like, it's real subtle and it's not like super heavy handed and it's pretty obvious, but it's like an element that doesn't usually get put into a lot of true crime docs, because they're usually pretty straightforward, just information first, and there's not really much filmmaking to it. This is less of the filmmaking, just more like thematically, where it's like you have the victim, Shanann, and her children, where she was just somebody who spent a lot of her time with her kids making these videos to sort of create this community with people. And then of course the mm-hmm. end of her life is so thoroughly documented in all these videos that are consumed by the same people. There's a, you know, and then leading back to the whole American murder in the title, there's something there that I appreciated.
Yeah. No, seeing her view and like how she was, you know, her text messages and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They don't really do that in a lot of documentaries. I thought that was interesting. I liked how they included the video she made.
It was mostly her too. Like, it was a unique opportunity in that sense too. It's not only that we got to see every part of the investigation, but we got to see and hear so much of her, where you, the victim, that's the biggest complaint against true crime, right? Is the victim is always often silenced or not a factor. It's always about the murderer. So it was nice in this one that we get so much of Shanann and her perspective and what she was thinking and feeling about this relationship.
Yeah. And especially in light of all those podcast clips with people being like, oh, she was a bitch and she drove him to this. Like, her text messages and her videos and her correspondence with him in the run-up to this just make what happened all the more inexplicable. Because yeah, they were having problems, but again, she also wrote him a love letter before she left for that trip. She's texting him the whole time, talking about how excited she is that they're having another kid and how much she loves him, and then gets home and he fucking murders her.
Yeah, also she's pregnant. Is that lost on these people? Like, Jesus Christ, come on.
Yeah, we haven't said the kid's name.
Well, you know, there's a whole other angle with like, you know how like people, women will be writing love letters to men in prison who have like slaughtered their families. Like he's one of those guys where like women are like, oh, he's so hot. And it, like, it's sick. You know, the term for that is hybristophilia. Have you heard that? It's like being attracted to people who have committed like crimes, like extreme crimes.
I mean, I'm not here to
teach. I knew it was a thing. I never heard that phrase before.
No, that's what it is. But I've like when I saw some of this like weird victim blaming online, and there definitely was a lot of women be like, oh, how could she treat him like that? He's so good looking. I'm like, oh my God. Like, something is psychologically very wrong with you. And, like, you have severe problems. Like, I just cannot imagine that mindset at all.
Yeah. You're a shark is
a misogyny. It's obviously like based in misogyny where you know people are always like, blame the woman, you know, it's her fault. Yeah. I don't know. It's sick.
Yeah. So I'm glad this documentary sets that record straight. Because there is nothing she did that warranted this. Like, not even sort of. Here's the thing.
And even if she did
smother the kids, you fucking call the police.
Yeah.
Like, you're a big, strong man. You could stop her. Like, that's another question no one asked. Well, like, well, what were you doing while she killed the kids?
Oh, are people seriously entertaining that defense now? Because, like, that sort of went out the window within minutes. Yeah. He just admitted to the actually murdering them all for no reason because he's a murderer.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, hopefully this guy, like, dies in prison, but... You know,
I feel like that's a certainty. It's just the questions. Yeah. Details need to get worked out there, but he's not getting out of prison.
Yeah. So that part's good. And I think that is our episode. Do we have any final thoughts on American Murder, The Family Next Door?
I mean, you know, very depressing documentary. Very depressed. Yeah. Like, I watched it last night again, and I was like, oh my God, why am I doing this to myself right now? But worth watching, I guess, you know.
It is.
I feel like it can shed light on, you know, issues of, like, hidden abuse or secrets and...
Yeah,
misogyny and stuff like that. I think it's important.
Yeah, I definitely don't think anyone would have seen this coming. Like,
No. I mean, yeah, not even her... family. Yeah, no, I think this is great. I think it's one of the better true crime docs I've seen. I love the way it's presented. Like I said, I really like that there's no narrator. There's like no,
yeah,
there's like, you know, part of the problem, like the Jinx is, you know, for all the things that the Jinx did well, it also has the issue of it has like a real obnoxious host that's trying to like make himself part of the story. And that happens a lot with true crime docs, at least the ones I've seen. But this one gets around that. They don't even have a narrator. It's entirely just the clips. So they just let like Shanann and the investigators and her friends and even the fucking murderer, they're the ones telling the story.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. That's how more of them should be done if possible, when possible, rather.
Yeah. It's really well done. It's really short. It's an hour and 20 minutes. It handles the case very respectfully, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And watch it if you're looking to bum yourself the fuck out this weekend.
I'm feeling too good today.
Yeah.
Click.
After last week's feel good episode about the documentary Take Care of Maya. Woof.
Oh, I started watching that also.
It is horrifying.
I'm not even halfway through, but I'm just like, what's gonna happen here?
I haven't watched that one, but I watched Dear Zachary for the first time about 10
oh my ago. God oh hell. My God, I watched that maybe like 10 years ago or whenever
it was, like 10 years ago
came out. Yeah, well, my boyfriend at the time was like, don't ever watch Dear Zachary, and I'm just like, fuck, like what is it? And then I watched, I was like, oh no, he was right. Like,
interestingly enough, Dear Zachary comes up on the Take Care of Maya episode, because Take Care of Maya is one of the saddest fucking documentaries I've ever seen.
That's what made me think. I don't know anything about it. It's just the title made me think of the title of Dear Zachary. So it's like, I wonder if these cases are similar.
No, what's crazy about Take Care of Maya is the aggressor is the state and child protective services. They essentially kidnap that child to the point that very, very bad things happen in that family. Awesome. It's worth watching also, Take Care of Maya. So I think that's it. Thank you both for doing the pod.
Of course.
this feels like a wildly appropriate time to get some plugs in. I got a comedy show November 10th at the Sardine in San Pedro. Tickets will be on sale soon. Come out for that. And that's all I got. Heather, what do you got to plug?
Well, follow me on Instagram and also X. I can't believe I'm X, just formerly Twitter. I know, I hate it, but it's still my favorite platform. How am I a crazy person? Okay, so it's at Fixed Air Heather. You can see it right there. And I post all of my show dates there. I don't know what I'm doing now. I have to like do some show in like Lake Arrowhead or something. I don't know what I'm doing. Like somebody has to drive me there because I hate the hills, but you know, I'll make it. So
Tom, what do you got?
Hey, as Adam mentioned earlier, I am the co-founder of the podcast network Gameplay Unemployed with David Bell, who's also a buddy of the Unpops. Or no, we don't call it that anymore. That's right. You can check us out at patreon.com/gameplayunemployed. But we also have a bunch of free shows you can listen to wherever you get podcasts. So check it out.
And I think that's it. Let's get the fuck out of here. Tom, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Heather, say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.